Blog Talk Radio.
Depending on your time zone, good afternoon and good afternoon to good morning and good afternoon, depending on where you live. My name is Simon Barrett, and this is Blogger News on the Radio. This is another in our ongoing series, Surviving the 21st Century, a look at health and nutrition in our modern world. Joining me, as always, are the writing and research team of Manny Barling and Ashley Brooks. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning, Simon. In Hollywood, we go cut, take two, and you get to start all over again. But sorry, I can't help you. Can you do that, Ashley?
No, I can't help you at all there, Simon. Good morning. Usually it's me. I'm glad that you did it this time.
You know, people have often asked me, do I tape programs and edit them just in case there's something icky? And I say, no, I love live radio.
I know
live.
You do, Simon.
Yeah. Live is the only way to go. Now,
well, slightly better than dead radio.
Absolutely. Now, I normally start with a cute little story, but I'm not going to. First off, I want to send out an anonymous thank you to two really, really nice people in Oklahoma. Jan loved the flowers and the chocolate. Oh, my goodness. It's to die for. In fact, I'm so concerned about the chocolate that I have hired armed guards. Jan cannot get near it. And boy, is she hot under the collar.
I don't blame her. That chocolate is really outstanding. You're going to love it bite of it.
Oh, amazing chocolate. And the second thing I want to talk about is Carmageddon. I mean, did you folks, you know, stock up for the weekend?
Oh, absolutely.
Knowing that L.A. would be total gridlock, you cannot close the 405 without shutting down L.A.
Well, oddly enough, it's not going to be a problem. It's just really quiet out. We went through the Olympics, and people in Los Angeles know when to stay home. Don't have to tell us twice. We have a guest, Sue McKinney, who I'm going to introduce in a moment, who lived in Los Angeles most of her life, and she can tell you when it starts around here, we all head for the exit, right, Sue?
Right.
So, in fact, before you start any funny stories, we should introduce Sue, who was our guest last week, and all of us felt we didn't finish our topics. We had so much to say that we put a rope around her, didn't let her leave, and we're making her come back again, against her will, of course. But Sue's a lawyer, a California lawyer who moved to Vietnam and has spent 17 years there in business. And for those who listened to us last week, we discussed Krilla, the secret herb from the King's Palace, which Sue represents, and she's the CEO of Krilla Health. And basically, Sue discussed with us all the traditional benefits of Vietnamese medicine, how Krilla helps men with prostates and problems, et cetera. But what we didn't get to were some of the more important issues, which were a hormone replacement therapy or ovarian cancer and a number of other things. And before we jump into any of that, we should probably give you some feeling of why we felt it was important to do this a second time around. In the United States, ovarian cancer is among the five leading causes of cancer death in women. As we reported last week, there are 600,000 hysterectomies a year, 170,000 performed because of uterine fibroids, About every 10 minutes, 12 hysterectomies are performed in the U.S.
And please keep that one in mind as we're going through this. Every 10 minutes that we're speaking, look at the clock, 12 women have had a hysterectomy.
So in an hour show, basically, 70 to 80 women have had surgery. And over $5 billion is spent annually on it. The average time off work is about 6 million lost days a year. And the numbers just keep going up. 30% of all women undergo hysterectomies by the age of 60. And for every 10,000 hysterectomies performed, 11 women die. And that's just approximately 660 women die a year. And it's just amazing. So there's two sides. One of them is that we've discussed the cancer issues and prostate. And today we're going to talk about hormone replacement therapy. And I guess the two best known drugs were Premin, which was created in 1942, and then Prempro, which was a new version of it, created in 1995. And basically, to give you some idea what kind of market this is, I mean, the dollars are just outrageous. And here we go. I'm looking for myself. I have so many numbers to look at. So basically, there are around 45 million Americans going through menopause at any given time. The number of prescriptions dispensed for vaginal estrogen products rose from 2.8 million in 2006 to 4.52 million in 2011. Okay? And it just, the numbers just get staggering. Estrogen accounted for $1.5 billion in sales. Progestogens accounted for $243 million.
2009.
And that's in 2009. And the progesterone-estrogen combination, $399 million. So basically, you're looking at a huge market. Prempro was a blockbuster drug. It was the first blockbuster drug for Wyeth, which means it sold over $1 billion, which allowed them to immediately sell themselves at a premium to Pfizer, who has just increased the use. So as we look at this, we'll go into the side effects and other things. But so, Sue, why don't you jump in and say hello? I know you went to a conference last year on hormone replacement therapy. And jump in and tell us what you'd like to tell us about that meeting last year.
Well, thanks, Manny. I was invited to attend a conference sponsored by the National Institutes of Health, a conference that is put on to foster scientists trying to bring products to market, and the government does help with that. But in the conference, they talked about the Women's Health Initiative, which was the largest study and initiative to encompass many aspects of women's
health. Sue, I'm going to interrupt you for a minute. Can you speak louder? Because there's a lot of fuzz on the line, and I'm having difficulty hearing you, and I want to make sure the listeners hear what it is you're saying.
Thanks, Ashley. The Women's Health Initiative, which was created with legislation allocating $625 million to the study of various women's health issues conducted by the National Institutes of Health, in 1991, recruited 216,000 women for various studies, and 26,000 of those women were dedicated to studying the results of hormone replacement therapy and hormonal research. The study started in 1991 and was expected to go for 15 years, and one of the things they were interested to study was that they thought these various hormone therapies was thought to lower the incidence of cardiovascular disease in women, and menopausal women in particular. And that would be a great thing if it were true. But the unexpected blow-up, to use Simon's terminology, was that by 2002, before the study was designed to stop, they called a halt. They stopped the study before it was due because, number one, they were not seeing a lowered incidence of cardiovascular disease. And indeed, they were seeing higher incidences of breast cancer, heart problems, and stroke in women, so high that they couldn't ethically continue with that study because it was endangering people.
Wow.
Now, I happen to have that study in front of me, and the specific data on that actually blew me away too, Sue.
Well,
the findings were that, pardon?
It blew the doctors away too.
The estrogen plus the progesterone group,
yes,
compared to a placebo group, 41% increase in strokes, 29% increase in heart attack, 22% increase in total cardiovascular disease, and 26% increase in breast cancer. The increase in cardiovascular and invasive breast cancer was so harmful that for them to even think about putting this out there was, it's just a horrible thing that this company did. And personally, I personally think these people belong in jail. But that's just me.
What's amazing is they're still selling it.
They are still selling it. They put a black box warning on it.
But it immediately, overnight, it threw millions of women out into the open without a treatment for their menopausal symptoms of hot flash and night sweats that they were going through, because this was thought to be the panacea. It was thought to be the answer. Now, they did find that it does depend on what age in menopause, what dosage, so they continue to allow the sale of it, but it should be under very strictly controlled doctor supervision. And if women were educated to know that they have a choice, you don't have to take pharmaceuticals, there are other herbal alternatives which can give you the benefits and the results that you're seeking without putting yourself at risk for these cancers, heart disease, and stroke conditions.
You know, so one of the things that alarms me is, as I search through this, some of these sales are hard to really pick out, because would you believe you can now buy this on the Internet without a prescription?
The Premarin and Prempro.
Premarin and Prempro are available to people on the Internet without a prescription. So they've had difficulty tracking the amount of sales and how they're going about these sales because of that. So it's scary how many people who have no idea what's going on are just able to get on the Internet and go, oh, well, this looks like it works for me, and basically go to Premarin or Prempro and order it without any consultation, without any participation from a doctor, and that makes it even more scary.
Whoa. Are you saying that this is not a federally regulated drug? You know, anyone can buy it without a prescription?
Well, that's a good question. What federal regulations are put on it? Because from what I can see, it's readily available. There are sites that advertise that you can buy it, and I don't know what restrictions have been placed on it. And so at the time, for the time being, yes. Go ahead, Ashley.
I discovered when there was something I needed. Oh, I know. It was Dristan. They pulled it off because people were taking things out of Dristan and putting it in their meth lab, so you couldn't get Dristan. And Dristan is the one thing during the wintertime occasionally I take for sinuses. So I discovered at that point that you can actually go online, and I'm sure other people have discovered this as well on the Internet, and they will put a doctor up, and you just put in what your problems are, and this doctor online will say, oh, okay, and then he okays, or she okays, getting the drug.
Wow.
So I guess I wrote into there that I had menopausal hot flashes and, you know, all the other symptoms that go with menopause, which we'll go over later, then I guess, you know, I probably could get Prempro and Premarin, you know, over it. What is this stuff, by the way? Someone want to start talking about, Sue? What is this stuff that we're talking about?
Premarin.
Premarin is
the letters of three words. It stands for pregnant mare's urine. It's estrogen that they're extracting from the urine. The ideal source of these estrogens to use in humans would come from the urine of pregnant women. But we don't have pregnant women that we can strap down and catheterize and keep isolated and impregnated to produce that product.
I'm surprised the pharmaceutical companies haven't done that yet. But go ahead,
even,
Sue.
Are they looking for volunteers?
Not even in any third world country that I'm aware of.
Darn.
But they can do it to horses. And horse, the estrogens, supposedly, from the horses are the next best thing to the urine of pregnant women. And this is where the internet is a little bit helpful on our side of the story. Groups have sprung up championing the cause and educating people on, do you know the source of Premarin? It comes from the urine of pregnant horses, which are in factory stalls, too narrow so that they can't lie down for months on end, because if they could move, they'd be able to remove the catheter, the bag that collects the urine. So these horses are kept catheterized and pregnant throughout their useful life. They aren't allowed to raise foals when they have the foals. The foals are generally shipped off and sold as horse meat for Europe and Japan. And when the mares are too old, they're shipped off and sold as horse meat. But that's the source of Premarin, pregnant mare urine.
Now, you have an experience with it. Don't you have a brother or brother-in-law who did something with a Premarin horse?
That's right. There are a number of foundations and people that are appalled at these practices, and they've sprung up around the U.S. and Canada to rescue both the foals and the older brood mares. And as it happens, my sister-in-law and brother were thinking about getting a couple of horses, and my sister-in-law found one of these rescue farms only 9 hours from their home in Northern California. So she prevailed upon my brother, let's go have a look. Let's go inform ourselves. It's only 9 hours away, and we're just going to go look, but let's take the llama trailer just in case there's something interesting. So indeed, they adopted two yearlings. And they were getting ready to leave. They'd made their contribution to the foundation. They were getting ready to leave. The yearlings were loaded. Shy and Shorty were loaded in the trailer. And they were leaving the farm. And I like to tell this story by then cutting to a famous Hollywood movie line. When Jack Nicholson was in Terms of Endearment, and he was the neighbor of Deborah Winger. Jack Nicholson was the arrogant astronaut, and Deborah Winger was the single mom living next door who comes down with terminal cancer. And her mother, Shirley MacLaine, comes on the scene. And Nicholson doesn't want any emotional entanglement and decides he's out of there for a few days. He's going to go attend an astronaut reunion in California. And he gets Shirley MacLaine to drive him to the airport. And he keeps up a constant patter throughout the drive so that she can't get in any significant conversation like, what are your intentions toward my dying daughter? And he hops out in front of the airport, and he's running for the door, and he reaches his hand out, pull open the airport door, and Shirley MacLaine calls him back. And Nicholson's classic line is, inches from a clean getaway. So, back to the Premarin story, my brother and sister-in-law were inches from a clean getaway, leaving the farm with their trailer of yearlings, and in comes the next delivery, the incoming truck. And it contained these two enormous golden Belgian Percheron horses, big draft horses. The bigger the horse, the more they pee. So these girls had been deemed too old to reproduce anymore. They had been, for years, side by side in some factory farm. They were tattooed on their haunches, number 716 and number 718. They had Rastafarian manes. Nobody ever grooms or pays any attention to these animals. They're a product. So my sister-in-law fell in love and said, they're mine, and I'll be back next week with professional horse movers. And to cut to the end of the story, they were getting ready 6 months later to move the horses into proper accommodation, and the vet was checking them, and they learned that one was pregnant. And that night, she gave birth to a little foal that they named Surprise. Totally unexpected. And the factory farm would have never let her go if they'd realized she was pregnant. And these two mares have never been allowed to raise a foal. So this little guy had a mommy and an auntie that were just doting all over him. So in total, my family has adopted 5 Primer and Rescue horses and given them these supplies. But the practice continues. Now, when the National Institute study was terminated because of the health risks to women, the industry took a big drop, and many of these factory farms were terminated. They didn't have a product that anybody was going to buy. So it took the numbers down a lot. But as Manny has pointed out, there's been a resurgence now in advertising. And so it's incumbent upon us to match that with education for women about you need to understand where this came from, the torturous, inhumane conditions under which it was procured. If you're wondering whether the HRT that you're taking is made from horse urine, you have only to crush it and put a little bit of water in it and smell it, and you'll know. It's obvious.
Yeah, it smells like pee.
It smells like pee.
Uh-huh. Or, no, it smells like horse pee.
Yeah.
Human beings are not intended to have animal pee, to swallow it in a pill, to put it into the woman's private area. I mean, it rub it on you as a cream. I mean, you know, Manny and I, when we started doing this Primer thing, I have to say, we had a crazy night where I just couldn't stop laughing. I said, you know, Manny, if I went to you or to Simon and I said, you know, guys, the best thing for you right now is to start rubbing horse pee on you, would you guys do it?
On
your private parts. And then if it said, you know, you really need to put it up your bum, that would be, hey, would you do it? Would you just go do it? What is it with women that they say, we're going to give you horse urine, like they're the snake oil salesman back in, you know, Bill Rockefeller's time, and we're going to take this, instead of Standard Oil, we're going to put horse urine up you, and that's going to cure you. And yet women across the country are so desperate because of our menopausal problems that we say, yay, okay, I'll take it.
Manny, I mean, I'm sure you will agree with me. I'm just not going down that road.
See, isn't it hysterical? Simon, you just wouldn't do it, would you?
No.
And sometimes that's a different, you know, between men and women. I mean, sometimes my doctor says something like that to me about something that I absolutely disagree, and sometimes I look at him and say, are you effing joking? I mean, you know, I just listen to him and I go, how can you tell me that?
Here's why they do it. Manny, I'm going to interject and give you this quotation that Manny had recommended to a friend of his, a woman that I have not met, to try Krilla because she was having really hard menopausal problems. And here's what she wrote to it. She said, I was ready to try anything. At this point in my life, I want to enjoy and not be hassled with ridiculous symptoms that make me grouchy, miserable, and plain uncomfortable. I was flashing constantly, about 5 times an hour during the day at work, and wanted to rip my clothes off constantly, much to my coworkers' distress. After then using Krilla for about 2 weeks, the symptoms have disappeared. My husband has noticed. My coworkers have noticed. And most importantly, I have noticed. She says, thank you, Krilla, and she signs it, Cool in California.
That's great.
You know, Simon, her husband sent me a box of chocolates. You know, I was with her one day with her husband, a little bit of work going on, and she looked at me, and her husband turned to me, and they've been friends of mine and clients for probably 25 years, and he said to me, her ears are turning red again, and sure enough, I could sit there and see her just go through the whole ordeal right in front of me. the ears turning red, right turning red. And the next time I saw her, I spent a morning with him, it was like night and day. It was hard to believe it was the same person. It was that dramatic of a change.
Well, and this occurs from a natural, organic botanical.
That's so right.
It's fantastic. And this is coming out of traditional medicine that's been going on for hundreds of years, and then add to that the 21 years of modern strict medical research that has been undertaken for Krilla.
What I like about it, too, Sue, and correct me if I'm wrong, and I'm sure there'd be statistics, particularly in a place like Vietnam, I know of in my research, no one who has ever died of any kind of dose of Krilla. And
why not? Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, and one of the things that bothers me is in the United States, we've acquired some acceptable level of death in our prescription drugs, and even in our surgical things. I'm reading off statistics about the number of people who die post-surgery from, you know, some type of a hysterectomy, and yet nobody's alarmed by that. Oh, yeah, a number of people die.
Oh, well, a couple thousand. So what, you know? Lightens up the load in America. You know, I mean, it's a horrible thing. But and one of the things I like about Krilla, too, is, again, I went back over looking over the beautiful manner in which the fields are kept. There's no pesticides, there's no herbicides, the fertilizers are organic, there's no chemical fertilizers allowed to be used. I love looking again at your video with the pristine manner in which the workers are in masks and clothing to protect them, the plants against them, so that they can't carry anything they may carry into that plant. So the organic manner in which your plant, there's such an incredible amount of safety that goes into it, even the water. I think that the water is pretty specific too, isn't it?
The water has been tested by the Pasteur Institute, which was founded in Vietnam in the 1800s. So, yeah, Dr. Tom, the Vietnamese pharmacologist that discovered and developed modern Krilla, is meticulous, and she is a scientist first. The science and the safety are the paramount goals for her. And the Ministry of Health in Vietnam studied Krilla for 15 years before it was licensed for use in all hospitals and pharmacies in Vietnam. And that included a clinical trial on benign prostatic hyperplasia for men and a clinical trial on uterine fibroid tumors for women. And Krilla has now been commercially available in Vietnam since 2005. I've made several trips for meetings with the Ministry of Health in Hanoi and have asked them repeatedly, what are the adverse event reports? Because in the U.S., we will have to disclose that. And they look at me like I'm nuts, and they say, well, there are none. And I said, what do you mean? Come on. There's got to be something. Well, okay, maybe now and then somebody complains they get constipated. We tell them to eat more vegetables. Or somebody suffers mild nausea. We tell them to take it with food. So there has been nothing that rises to the level of what the FDA would consider an adverse event where you need medical or hospital intervention for some side effect from Krilla. In fact, the side effect that most amuses me is in the study on uterine fibroid tumors, there's a throwaway line where they're talking about the side effects, and the male doctors that were conducting that study said, oh, these women report decreased pain and flow. But of course, these are subjective considerations, so it must be wrong. As if we don't know if we have decreased pain and flow, I thought it was hysterical, hilarious.
Yeah, I agree. But that's the whole thing. If you're a patient in the United States, you're immediately dumb and you know nothing, and the doctors that spend 5 minutes with you once every month or two to look at your health know everything. And it's part of that that caused us to write 4 health books with another one coming out, is we just got sick of doctors treating us like we're dumb. And in my case, I have the classic case. I had a reaction to Vioxx. I said to my doctor, you know, I've been taking this for a couple of weeks, and it makes me ill, and I have all these symptoms, and of course, with Crohn's disease, the symptoms was even worse. And my doctor, a 30-plus-year friend of mine and a longtime client, said to me, don't be such a sissy. Of course, he wouldn't say that to any other patient in this world but me. So he started telling me I was a sissy.
Oh, here he is, Sue. Fall, he would take the medication, eat, you know, do what he's supposed to with the medicine, and he's, I don't know, passing out like 30 minutes later.
So I continued to take it for not a brief time, maybe another couple of weeks, and I was about to say I can't do this when it gave me a form of a heart attack. My pulse went up to about 240 beats a minute one night, and I just passed out, and I'm lucky I didn't die. So about 3 months later, the TV ads changed for Vioxx and Celebrex. If you take a sulfitamide, which is acetol and other ones that are a sulfur-based drug to give people post-surgery for ulcers, Crohn's disease, colitis, all sorts of other things, you can't take the drug. Well, of course, there was no warning when I was taking it. And if you have any history of these things, it can give you a heart attack. Gee whiz. Nice of them to tell us that, too. And then, of course, they denied that was true when the FDA said it can give you a heart attack. And shortly thereafter, they learned that the principal test for Vioxx was a fraud. And it was done by a doctor named Scott S. Rubens, who's now in jail for 10 years, since more than 100,000 people died because of Vioxx. They probably should have got the death penalty. I mean, you get people screaming in Florida that Casey Anthony should get the death penalty, but yet some drug company may come out and kill 100 children with vaccines, or a few elderly here or there with Celebrex and Vioxx and all these other people, and nobody in the United States seems to be bothered by that, and it just drives me nuts. So here we have over 3 million people, 3 million women taking some form of hormone replacement therapy, having unnecessary, in many respects, studies show that more than half, up to 70% of the hysterectomies are not called for, which means that we have 600 women a year dying, but nobody seems to say much about that either. And now in the face of this, which you'll find interesting to compare with Krilla, at one time, a pill, a Premarin pill, a Prempro, sold for around 14 cents each. In the last couple of years, since all this started, the cost has gone up to about $1.24 a pill. $1.24 a pill for this drug that can kill you. So you're not only, it's insult to injury, not only is this a very damaging drug, but you're paying to die.
Well, and by taking horse urine.
Yeah. So, and again, you know, if somebody said to me as a man, I think what you ought to do is dip your wick into a bowl full of horse urine, and but I warn you, it may kill you or cause
you
to
have a heart attack
or
blood,
a heart attack.
Blood clots and, you know,
and
everything that I'm saying.
And I'm going to charge you a lot of money for it.
Sorry?
And I'm going to charge you a lot of money for the
drug. A lot of money, yes.
And you're going to have to pay to die, you know. The next thing you know, the industry will be offering bidets with
horse urine. There you go. Got to sell that horse urine somehow.
What a great idea. Maybe Sue can go into the horse urine bidet business.
This could be the next big hit on eBay.
I'm sorry, Sue. Go ahead.
Manny, I will take exception to your comment that nobody in the U.S. cares. The good thing is through people like you and Dr. Google, more and more people are caring. And I genuinely believe that more and more doctors would love to know the genuine research behind it. I was disappointed that in Vietnam they hadn't actually done any studies on Krilla for menopausal hot flashes, because they just don't see why anybody would bother. The women will just suck it up and go through it. But, in fact, the whole National Institutes of Health Women's Health Initiative is good because they did conduct this research, and now we know. We made the assumption that these hormones were going to be beneficial for cardiovascular health, but because of the scientific evidence-based research they conducted, they learned that the assumption was untrue. So, yes, it hurt a lot of women during the process, but look at all of those that it saved.
And, Sue, I don't want to sound too cynical about it, The fact is, I don't know if you're aware of this stat, but according to a recent study, the number of mares, for example, have gone down from approximately 48,000 down to approximately, I believe it's 5,000 or 6,000. So in many respects, some aspects of this has been very, very successful.
Yes, and now I'm extremely hopeful that when women learn they have yet another organic, safe, effective alternative to HRT. We have women that have gone off HRT, taken Krilla, and alleviated or eliminated their hot flashes.
I think that's fantastic, Sue.
But there's more to come.
I know.
We need to do more, and we're very, very pleased to be starting the first pilot clinical trial on Krilla for hot flashes in the U.S. with Dr. Tori Hudson up in Portland, Oregon, who is a clinical professor at the Southwest College of Naturopathic Medicine, at Bastyr University, and the National College of Naturopathic Medicine. And she says that we will pursue evidence-based research on Krilla to learn more about these promising benefits that Krilla may offer to women seeking an alternative to pharmaceutical treatment, given that all women will reach menopause at some point in their life.
Well, and in 2000,
they need to know that they have choices, and more options is a good thing, and more effective options without side effects is the most desirable.
Would this lead me to believe that maybe you are heading down the road to the FDA?
Probably not. The FDA does have a niche classification that's not an herbal supplement and it's not a pharmaceutical, and they call it botanical drug. And there have been 200, if I'm correct on my numbers, 234 companies that have made applications to the FDA for approval for a botanical drug. Now, Ashley and Manny, you be quiet because you probably know the answer. But Simon, would you care to guess at that how many of those applications have been approved?
Well, if the FDA are running the show, probably none.
Well, you're close. They approved one.
I said one. I guessed it. I said one. I'm sitting here going, Manny, it's one.
They approved an application for a topical cream made from a green tea extract that treats genital warts. And that is allowed to be sold as a botanical drug, which means you can make medical claims. Krilla is a dietary supplement, so we can't make medical claims, and don't. But if you did go through that process, but look how discouraging that is for people that may have a legitimate botanical drug that could be highly beneficial, but look at the cost. And you can go down that path. You can file an intent to do that with the FDA, go in and review it with them, and conduct all the research, which is expensive with both time and money. And what if it proves everything you hope it will prove, and then the FDA says, well, that looks good, do it again.
Well, I'm looking here at a law that says each drug review application to the FDA, the pharmaceutical companies pay them $300,000 for a review application.
Oh, that's nothing, Ashley. They estimate that the cost to bring a new pharmaceutical to market today is $750 million for a pharmaceutical. So it's extremely expensive, and if anything, I'd say, well, good, they ought to have to pay the FDA to review. I mean, why should we, the taxpayer, pay all of the burden? I know I'll open this up, Manny, but...
Well, you know, let's look at the bigger issue is this is really a way for the drug businesses who are so politically powerful to control what is done basically in the FDAs and to control the products that are approved. So so the politics behind the scenes to prevent things from being approved are just amazing.
And the manner in which they're approved, for like all the claims that are done with soy, knowing that soy is really very toxic, there's a lot of toxic elements to soy, and the FDA switched off, some documents got switched off when they were doing the approval on the soy, and it's written up on the third symposium, which I would, you know, take a look at that, Sue. It's a really interesting document, or I'll send it to you, on how the FDA switched some documents around to get soy approved. And it's a very difficult thing. I think the path that you're taking is very admirable.
Yeah, well, you know, it's more basic than that, Ashley. I mean, it's strictly business, the type of business that Sue and I spent so many years in. If you have the politics, you can get it done. So here you've got a product that, let's say, competes with something made by Monsanto, because, I mean, God forbid we go a show without mentioning Monsanto.
Many, we have gone 40 minutes without mentioning Monsanto. We've set a new record.
Well, that's because I forgot to discuss Anonymous earlier. And to make a long story short, what happens when that gets to the desk of Michael Taylor, the former employee of Monsanto, who's in charge of, right now, I guess he's in the USDA. So what happens when he looks at it and goes, oh, my God, if these people sell it, it can affect my former client and employer. I can't let them do that. And that's exactly what happens. They don't let them do that. And so at the end of the day, it's rigged. It's just basically rigged. Sad as it may seem. You know, the process is rigged in the United States, and we all have to get used to the fact that what we're dealing with is a crooked entity.
Which is a shame, because what you have is an honest product. We have not brought products up or bring products on the show, really, have we, Manny? Yours
No.
is the very first, because I think that the fact, again, it's an organic plant. It's a green, living, non-biotech plant. It actually came from the earth.
Well,
and it has 20-plus years of study done on it.
Yeah, and I appreciate your bending the rules a little bit with Krilla, because here's our dilemma. Krilla is actually news. This is newsworthy, because somebody has to be the first. If you were the first Paul Pimento or the first Echinacea, somebody has to come forward with the product. And it's so rare, there's so little of it, that Dr. Chum happens to be the one. I mean, I've had, she was in meetings with the World Bank recently, and the World Bank consultants that are working with her to help support her in her research and development, they said, we would never have done this. 21 years you've been doing this. No company would do this. No government would do this.
That's right.
And she's done it. And so now we're excited to be able to share this with the world, and I get a little bit of resistance from some media saying, oh, you're a product. Well, yes, how are you going to get it if it's not a product?
When you become a product, though, they perceive you as an advertising source. So they say to themselves, oh, they got a product, and what they want is for us to push this product, but we really would prefer their advertising dollar, and that's sometimes a factor, too. And it's a bigger factor than people look at. The same way I listened to Bill Maher last night being interviewed by Piers Morgan, and they're thanking, you know, HBO for putting him on, because if it were anyone else, he would be in a fight every single day of the week with management about the things that he says. And that's exactly the problem.
Our company may be naive, but we are spending our money on research and education rather than advertising.
I agree. And by the way, one of the reasons you're on the show is Ash and I feel very strongly in what I call the proof is in the pudding research. I don't care how many tests you run, the millions of people in Vietnam have used this for centuries, the amount of people that we've seen use and have immediate results, not, oh, take this for 3 or 4 months and then measure your results.
With no side effects.
Right, and speak for themselves. And again, we believe that the proof's in the pudding. It works or it doesn't work. That's the American tradition. and, you know, trying to tell me that you tested on a horse or some other thing and therefore it's now going to work on you is not what I want to hear, and I don't think any other American wants
to hear. Or my favorite scientific thing right now is that they've genetically engineered mice using human DNA, and then they're running tests to see how that's going to work.
Well, let me prick my own balloon a little bit, Manny. As much as I'd like to think that Krilla could help everybody immediately, as we said on last week's show, everybody is different.
That's
for
right.
For some people, it will take months to achieve the maximum benefit from taking. The lucky ones will feel it a benefit in a few days or a couple of weeks. But for some people, it takes longer. They've been polluting their bodies for 15 or 25 years. You're not going to get an immediate reversal of that. So,
well, you're right. I didn't. I
give time.
Yeah, I didn't intend to say it was a miracle drug that was a catch-all for everything. What I'm saying is that it works for a number of people, and it works well. And that is really the test. Whether it works on the individual who tries it is something that's different with everybody. In fact, the few people I've discussed who have tried Krilla have basically found that it works in a different ratio for them than it would be the next person. So at the end of the day, each person has to take a different dose. Every drug, everything, even simple things like sugar affect human beings differently in that manner. So at the end of the day, yes, this is an issue in looking at it that everyone has to deal with. We're not the same. Nothing is going to happen the same. But at the same time, the odds are good this is going to be good for you because it's been good for other people.
But I also think you had a good point just now, Sue. The fact that if a person has a problem, and that problem, you are what you eat, is brought on by the toxic chemicals and the various pesticides and things they put into their body, and they continue, even if they take the American way of taking their medicine, they continue down the same path of doing what they were doing and same putting the same toxic things in their body, oh, geez, how are they going to get well? So you're right, Sue, it may just take a little longer.
We don't like to hear that the real secrets to wellness are lifestyle. They're diet and exercise and lifestyle. And herbal supplements can be an important part of that.
Right.
But they're not the whole picture.
Okay, can I ask a question? And I think I probably already know the answer, but I need to ask it anyway. Krill is a herb. It's a plant. Why grow it in Vietnam? Why not just bring some krilla seeds to the U.S. and grow it here?
Good question. Krilla stands for Crinum latifolium. That's the full name of the herb. And it's part of in the Crinum family, there are 180 different species in the Crinum family. There are 12 different subspecies of Crinum latifolium. Dr. Chan studied those 12 and isolated the one subspecies that has the right concentration of alkaloids and flavonoids to give a medicinal benefit. So it's taken her years to get enough Crinum latifolium plants to, number one, satisfy the local demand in Vietnam, and two, have enough for us to be able to export some. It takes years for these plants to reach the full biological maturity necessary to make krilla. You could think of it as vintage krilla, which is why it's not cheap. It's not your inexpensive dietary supplement. It's too rare. And when Dr. Chom was figuring all of this out, one of her daughters told me, growing up in Hanoi, their balconies were filled with all of these pots with her mother's experiments. And at one point, she uprooted the family and said, "It doesn't grow here. We're moving south." And then they moved down into southern Vietnam, where she has very specific criteria for soil conditions, water conditions, proximity to the ocean, prior use of the land.
Which was organic.
Her prime plantation was used for generations to grow medicinal herbs. It has never seen a speck of any chemical or herbicide in this southern part of Vietnam. Agent Orange was never a factor. It was never used there. Her expanded plantation now is also on land that the government had set aside for organic farming. So how you could duplicate those conditions elsewhere, is it impossible? Probably not, but the right conditions, the right soil, the right plants are there. So we have no intention at this point of trying to grow it somewhere else. And indeed, Crinum latifolium from other places is likely not to have the same chemical fingerprint. It's not the same. She won't even buy raw materials, raw crinum from other farmers that now that she's made it famous and successful in Vietnam, other poor farmers try and sell her their crinum. And she says, it's not the same as mine. It won't, number one, it won't work, and I don't believe it's the same. So she won't buy it. So there's a limited amount, and we'll keep that all right under her very strict control. These are family-run businesses. Her son-in-law is the head of the factory. She took our American investment money and built, number one, she did the plantation expansion so that someday we'd have enough growers to export. And then she built a brand-new factory, GMP to World Health Organization standards. It's the highest standard you can get in Vietnam. And I would invite anybody to take a tour of that factory.
Well, you know, Sue, I liken this to our running joke about my tomatoes. It's not only what you're growing, it's how well you grow them and how good you are at it. And so it also takes the weather because, as you know, the weather is different in Los Angeles from one side of the hill to the other. And a lot of our friends who live on the west side of Los Angeles are always upset because my tomatoes look better than theirs because it's warmer in the San Fernando Valley, and we have a better choice of weather. So we're talking about going 5 miles over the hill into the San Fernando Valley, and the weather conditions are so different that I get huge amounts of fruit off my fruit trees. You haven't been in the house a little while, but you'll be surprised to find the lime tree we planted 4 years ago is now 15 feet tall, but it wouldn't be 15 feet tall if we're on the other side of the hill. And I think that if you moved even 10 miles in an area like Vietnam, that 10-mile difference would affect the soil, the weather, and a million other things and would reflect in what you're basically growing. And so I think, you know, real estate, that old line in real estate about location, 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 I think applies to growing probably more than any other subject I've seen. And that, to me, is one of the reasons why Krilla will not probably be able to be relocated at some other location or site around the world and be successful growing it. And by the way, the fear to me is really are the Monsantos of this world. If Krilla gets very, very successful, the first one we're going to have out of their mouth is, oh, we can make a genetically modified version that now can come to fruition in 2 years, and you won't have to wait 5 years, which is what they're trying to do with chocolate, if you read our recent chocolate blog. So.
And, of course, they're doing it with grass.
Don't get me started on chocolate.
Don't get me started, right, Simon? Grass. How can they do it to grass? And so, you said something, Sue, that I don't have the answer for, so I'd like to ask. And also, there's several types of phytoestrogens, which are identified as flavonoids, correct? And these are plants containing estrogens, which are like peas, flaxseed, pomegranates, green peas, hummus, garlic. Things are found in, I think it's in alfalfa, some wheats. I mean, there's things that actually have natural, organic flavonoids or these things within it that are actually then in Krilla.
But that's also found in chocolate, by the way, flavonoids.
Right, alkaloids and flavonoids that have been identified in Krilla. And by the way, if you want more information on some of this, you can go to our website at CrillaHealth.com. That's CrillaHealth.com. And click on the research tab. You can download the original clinical trials for BPH, prostate in men, for uterine fibroid tumors, for some of the pharmacology and toxicology studies. Kathy, just posting a couple of new studies. I sent you one last week. And Simon, I'll make sure that you have the link on these for your blog. But there are two studies that I find really interesting. One done in Europe at the Innsbruck Medical University. Dr. Chan has two European research teams that collaborate with each other. And they just published one in May that is studying Prilla on BPH cells and prostate cancer cells. And one thing that study did that was very interesting to me was that it measured the ORAC value of Prilla. And ORAC is the oxygen radical absorbance capacity. A lot of different fruits and vegetables are now being championed as having antioxidant properties, and ORAC is the measurement by which we know how much those antioxidant properties are in, contained in that one thing. And that recent Innsbruck Medical University study cited another study done by in Australia by doctors Lau, Banbury, and David Leach that studied the top 45 traditional Chinese herbs and measured their ORAC value. And I found it very interesting. They didn't study Crinum latifolium. It's not a traditional Chinese herb. But the two top herbs, their scores were 1990 and 1940. And then it dropped pretty radically down to 1400, 1300, 1200, and down into the hundreds. The ORAC value of Krilla is 1610. It would rank number 3 in the top Chinese herbs. I just find that fascinating and something that I know that we don't understand fully what the benefits of antioxidants are. Ashley, you can probably comment more on that than I can, but I'll make sure that you have, these sites will be going up on our website soon, and I'll make sure that you have both of them on your website as well.
And also, Sue, one of the questions I had last week when you were on was, if they were checking for the cervical cancer virus, that the virus is causing the cervical cancer, and it looks like in your tests that they did find a positive result in working with it as an antiviral. So I don't know where that is or what that study is other than the fact that they did find some really good results on it. So it looks like you are doing studies in Vietnam on that. So
well,
that's a very good thing. It's very encouraging.
In the Innsbruck Medical University study, they do talk about the antiviral effect. Now, I am not a doctor. I'm not a medical professional, so I can't interpret that data, but any medical...
Sue, I was having difficulty with it. So all I can say is the fact that it's encouraging from what I could understand of it, and... I think this is a really great product. I can't wait to see what you do with it and how it gets into helping people in this country, because I think it's going to help a lot of women. I mean, the CDC stat, by the way, for 2000 with menopause was 37.5 million women would be reaching it between the ages of 40 and 59 in 2000. So I don't know what the date is current, but that's a lot of women, 37.5 million women. In just 1 year. That doesn't include all the other women in the previous years. It's a lot of women out there in menopause.
Okay. Can I ask, one of my famous stupid questions? what is an antioxidant, and why would I be concerned about it?
Well, antioxidants, depending upon who you believe and who you'd like to use as a source, are believed to stop cancer by killing cancer cells, and that when the oxidation of the particular food hits a precancerous tumor, allegedly it destroys that. And I say allegedly because I'm not enthralled with all the various tests that I've read in this area, and the extent to which it helps is still unknown. In my case, I took antioxidants for 25 years, long before it was popular. A number of weightlifters and other people had suggested this to me when I was much younger. And in the end, I found none of those helped me avoid what was ultimately surgery for malignant cancer. So what we're doing basically as human beings are throwing enough herbs and medicines against the wall until some of them stick and hopefully improve our health. But one thing I do know from all of the years I've studied this, and I've got 14 years and 7,000-8,000 different medical journals behind me, probably more than my average doctor friends have read during that time, trying to understand how I became ill with Crohn's disease and required the kind of radical surgery I did. And there's one thing I learned is that every prescription drug has side effects. Every one of them are a problem. There are no prescription drugs that are basically good for humans in any way, shape, or form. At least with natural herbs, you have a shot because, gee whiz, they come from nature, and you never can tell when something good will come from nature. But I think it's safe to say nothing good is going to come from a lab, because if you look at the things cooked up in labs from everything from methamphetamines down the line, it's really a license for scientists to play God. And so anytime you have an opportunity to take a natural herb, take it and try it. It may work for you. It may not work for you, for somebody else, but it may work for you, and you're not going to know until you try. And so using antioxidants, I think, is really helpful for a great many people. But on the day you die, you're not going to be able to say, I lived 5 years longer because of antioxidants. But I think you have a better chance with your product, Sue, of saying, I lived longer because I took this. The same way I joke with my friends, at my age, I feel 10 years younger than I did in my early 50s, and I know it's because I take enzymes, because I can feel the changes in my body. Hopefully, people will get up one day and be able to say, I feel the changes in my body when I take antioxidants, when I take Krilla, and I take a wide variety of other things. But we all have to understand the industry is not going to believe them, because if it's not done by a test with an industry and it doesn't produce a drug that can be controlled and sold by them, then I guarantee you they're not going to concede that it works for anyone. And that's just my observation of being a cancer patient for 14 years now and reading and listening to everything published that may affect my cancer, because I would like to be around a little longer, and I'm going to live a long time and prove that this does work, as I believe other women will who take this and avoid the Premarin and the other line, because I believe women who switch to these herbs will reduce the frequency of cancer and a number of other things. And at the end of the day, they'll still be standing. So if you want to be one of those people still standing in life, you need to kind of look at life a little differently and try something else. And that's my thought for you for today. Ashley, you have any thoughts about that?
I wanted to get back for one moment with, because Andy, that completely covered it with the antioxidants. You covered it. Cancer can't live in oxygen, which is they put them in hyperbaric chambers, and they're doing different things and experimenting with cancer, and cancer can't grow where there's oxygen. It does grow in the sugar auger, so people with cancer should stay away from sugar, especially synthetic sugars. But, Sue, I wanted to get back for 2 seconds on tying something in that I was thinking about that works, I think, in some comparison with Krilla. First of all, when we're talking about symptoms of menopause, we talk about there's one common factor in each one of them. We talk about hot flashes, which, for just a brief moment, the body's thermostat, which is located in the hypothalamus of the brain, it just stops working because of the level of estrogen. So your hot and cold sensation then causes these hot flashes. And it's, again, because of the estrogen. When you have sleep problems, vaginal dryness, bladder problems, aches, pains, skin problems, emotional problems, the symptoms that go with menopause, every one of them tie into estrogen. Now, some women have gone to, as you said before, alternative medicine for menopause. Now, the one common thread that goes for all these medicines I'm looking at, from Black Cahoosh, they have a thing called chas tree, which is dried fruit, damiana, which is a dried leaf, dandelion, dong quai, false unicorn root. What else are these? Ginkgo, ginseng, licorice. You go through all of these, and one of the things that seem to be the common thread there is your estrogen, your effects on the adrenal glands, and that's what people have in this country, and it's called alternative medicine for menopause. What I like about Corilla is the fact that it is an organic plant, and from what we've just discussed, it contains the flavonoids that are a natural organic phytoestrogen or an estrogen that will balance out all of these symptoms. So instead of taking all these other herbs, you can actually replace it with the Corilla, which is an organic one-stop shop.
Well, first of all, by the way, what we're talking about is our thoughts, not yours, and you're not promoting this, and I realize that you can't, but there's nothing to stop Ash and I
from drawing my own conclusion. I was like drawing lines across the board last night going, wow. All these herbal medicines, the black cohosh that everyone talks about, it's a good estrogenic herb is how they promote it.
Well, first of all, a little bit flippantly, here's something you'll like about Krilla. It smells like chocolate. Now,
boy.
I like it already.
Simon's on board.
It doesn't taste like chocolate, but I do have a fantasy of, you know, there are chocolate products coming to market that are enhanced with calcium and enhanced with other things that we think are beneficial. I have a fantasy about Krilla chocolate, but that's for another day.
Oh, my gosh. If you could bite into your chocolate bar and take care of the menopause, you'd be millions of women will be out there bowing to your feet.
I want you to know that Simon wants to invite you back already. The minute
tell a woman you can have six chocolates a day and reduce your menopause symptoms. So there's a market for anything. On the serious side, Dr. Chom believes that Krilla is not a plant-based estrogen.
Okay.
It appears to be a plant that has an estrogenic effect without the side effects of estrogen. And one of the things she's seeking to do is be able to support more research for the mechanism of action of Krilla. Because a lot of things, so many products, we don't know exactly how and why they work, and we don't have to. As pharmaceutical companies don't have to prove the mechanism, correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe they don't have to prove the mechanism of action to bring a product to market. They have to prove what it does and what effects it has, but not necessarily how it does it. And Manny
That's
calls
correct.
Up something else that I remember when you were talking about the foods we eat and the pharmaceuticals we take. I remember sitting in a law library years ago going through the PDR, the physician's desk reference, and reading about certain pharmaceuticals that you couldn't take if you were eating onions, for instance. Because all these natural products have different properties and chemicals that can react with the pharmaceuticals, even
That's
if
right.
it's not another drug. You know, if we combine the wrong plant, if we combine the right plant in our bodies, we can complete protein chains and do beneficial things. It must also follow that you can combine the wrong things, and some plants are poisonous. So you do have to know. What's the famous Agatha Christie one? Is it not foxglove, the poison?
Yes, I think it is foxglove. I think you're right.
Yes.
Is it Simon?
Yeah, it's most definitely foxglove. It's product is a blood thinner.
Digitalin. No, but anyway, so there are beneficial mushrooms and there are poisonous mushrooms. So we have to do the research on plants just as we have to do the research on pharmaceuticals. So plants generally reveal their negative characteristics more readily. So we can have a higher level of confidence that once the plants have been tested, they're not likely to harm you.
Well, yeah, and usually, you know, I mean, when it comes to plants, there's one thing is we have a history of this world of really studying botanical plants. In fact, if anything, they're studied less in this century than they have been in prior centuries, and I think the average human being knows far less about plants, including farming and growing, than they have in probably the last 8 or 10 centuries. Right now, I would consider the world generally stupid and uninformed in that area. It's just strange that we would abandon this information in our society that is so important to our survival, but it doesn't appear to be important to anyone anymore.
Okay, it came to me. Digitalis is the drug.
Right.
Well, Digitalis is definitely one of them, yes.
Well, from Foxgloves.
Oh, from Foxgloves.
Oh, yeah.
Right, it is from Foxgloves. That's correct.
I was trying to think, Digitalis, where does that go to the estrogen? My brain wouldn't check over there.
Simon, you did it to us all again.
You did it to me again, Ann. Now, one of the things that also we did not get into today, Manny, was a little bit about the ghostwriting and how Premin and Prempro got into the market.
Well, let's get into that really quickly. You want to jump into that?
No, I think you should, because you really covered that so well.
Well, I don't even have it in front of me. We wrote a blog that's available at basically Blogger News Net that I'm trying to think of the title. If you give me just a moment here, I'll be able to give it to you. And it's about, Simon, do you remember the net? It's about peer review. It's called, do you know the peer-reviewed publications, scientific abstracts, journal supplements, white papers, and other things are ghostwritten to sell you food and drugs? Well, there's a lawsuit that went on over Premier, and it's still going on as far as I know, that basically it revealed that all of the information involving Premarin and Prempro were ghostwritten by a company called DreamWrite. On their website, they say, quote, they planned, created, or managed hundreds of advisory boards, 1,000 abstracts and posters, 500 clinical papers, and over 10,000 speaker bureau programs, over 200 satellite symposiums, 60 international programs, dozens of websites, and a broad array of ancillary printed and electronic materials. Okay. And this is not a research lab. So they're writing the materials when you get your prescription drugs. They're writing the materials in the boxes. They're writing the materials for doctors. And about 90% of these published studies in the JAMA, the Journal of American Medicine, the AMAs of the Lancet are all basically ghostwritten by employees of the drug companies, and then the authors look at them and they basically sign off on them for money, of course. And this is how things get done. So basically, I'll give you an example how bad Premarin and Prempro is. There are over 300 women in Florida that have been paid settlements on it. There are over 2 million lawsuits that I'm aware of, which could even be higher right now. And basically, we had a lady, Dr. Adrienne Few Berman, who's the director of Farmed Out, which is part of the Department of Physiology and Biophysics at Georgetown University, was given all of these confidential documents obtained during the litigation involving Prempro, which really disclosed how the basically more than 14,000 women became victims of breast cancer almost immediately after the product was put out and they hid it. So what happened is from 97 to 2003, DesignWrite published over 50 peer-reviewed publications.
That's going into JAMA, going into all your major magazines that the doctors are taking as gospel.
More than 50 scientific abstracts and posters. Ashley explained what an abstract is when a doctor gets a medical journal article.
Well, Sue, you would be familiar with that. It's where you take all of the scientific data and you do a summary. And then a ghostwriter comes in. This is a person who's like not in the science world at all, just a writer, a typical let's go hire Hollywood writer. He reviews the article, all the material, all the scientific data. He weighs it himself and says, you know, I'm going to weigh out all this medical research that I know nothing about. I'm going to offer my bottom line judgment about how am I going to treat a particular ailment. Oh, my gosh, we can't sell this if we say it's going to cause heart attacks. We can't sell this. Ooh, can we bury this somewhere?
So they put together a nice, glossy little summary. And then they pay the doctors and the scientists articles to sign these articles. They get anywhere from 25 to 50 to 100,000. Two doctors, Brenneman is the name of one, I can't remember the other one's name, at Harvard, were paid over $2 million to sign off on articles that allowed doctors to prescribe psychotherapy drugs to children. I mean, there's a case of a Stanford, head of a department at Stanford, who owned a company who did the test to show the company's product was good and then profited by it until it got caught. There were two guys in the psychiatric area of Emory University that got paid $1 million. When he got chided and caught by Senator Grassley in Congress, he promised to report any donations over $10,000, which is the legal requirement. The next year he got paid $500,000, and he failed to report that until he was caught. So the level of dishonesty in these reports that support Premarin are just totally beyond any description at all.
And a lot of the medical doctors are just so disgusted by it. There's a Dr. Joseph Ross at Mount Sinai Medical School School of Medicine in New York said that you just don't know which articles are tainted and which aren't.
Well, let me add that. I pulled up a number. Wyeth, which is now Pfizer, paid up $413,140.60 for the supplement that was mailed to 128,000 physicians and gynecology additions of women's health and primary care. They paid Dreamwright to write these glossy little stories. And I'll give you an analogy where I think Sue will agree. As a lawyer, you get cases. Let's say it's an important case and it's 80 pages long, and I can think of some, and I'm sure Sue can too, without even going back to Falsgraf, right? And these long cases are synopsized into abstracts for lawyers. Well, you read them and you go, gee, that's nice, and you go read the case and you don't agree with the abstract. Or you find he cherry-picked some second quote that we call dicta, which is incidental to the case, as to the primary reasons. And so often, Ashley will say to me, I read about this case, and I'll say to her, but that's not what the case means, because some amateur, or in the case of this, they hire young lawyers out of law school, the good companies do, and they try to write them. Well, the only ones who could write them are probably lawyers who practice 25 years in a specific field. So now take that to medicine, where they just pull these ad agency guys who come from Ivy League schools with English degrees to turn, you know, basically a sow's ear into a purse, right?
Absolutely.
And that's what they're doing to these drugs. So you can't believe what's written in them. You can't believe the representations they make. And especially don't believe those commercials on TV that are the most dishonest and deceptive things I've ever seen in my life. If someone else did it besides a drug company, they would be taken off the air. But when you provide the level of advertising income and lobbying money that Big Pharma provides and Big Food to the networks, and you take a look at the evening news and you see the number of drug commercials in the evening news, you can't expect that evening news to say that Premarin comes from horse urine and the tests have been falsified and the magazine article's incorrect. Women are dying of breast cancer and it's a national disgrace. Every drug company would band together and pull all their advertising. So what you get are diluted, cute little pieces of news, because the truth stopped the day Edward R. Murrow died. Because no one has had the courage to stand up since. And I'm going to get off my soapbox.
Manny, are you going to tell me that those glorious adverts, sugar is sugar, are not telling me the whole truth?
No, the Corn Refiners Association think that when you cook sugar up in a lab next to their methamphetamine lab and their maltodextrin lab and all the rest of them, and by the way, they may all be the same product with just a different label on it, that essentially it's just pure sugar.
Right, USDA approves it, and it's done at the research lab in Peoria, so what can we say?
Yeah.
I really enjoyed your rant, and...
you know what? This one really just bothers the heck out of me, Simon. I mean, and Sue, one of the things that they touted is that the Premarin and the PremPro was the gold standard for treating hot flashes, and it was less enthusiastic about any other therapies. It took 4 years for them to go through all of the ghostwriting to actually come up with who wrote what where and which Hollywood celebrities, you know, I'm making that part up, but it's like, you know, so you have an understanding. It's like no different than a Hollywood filmmaker. They wrote a film on how to get PrimPro out there.
Yeah, right. So I suggest to our readers either go to our site, howtoeliminatepain.com, or blog a newsnet and look up our name, or in this case, just look for the peer-reviewed publications article and read it. And so you should probably read it and pull the name of the author of some of these papers. She's written a 2,000-page summary of this, and because I think it goes to the issues that you have in terms of hormone replacement therapy, because she just blows the doors off of the hidden secrets and lies attached to Premarin and PremPro. And looking at the time, we all need to find something nice to wrap this show up. And Sue, we're going to have you back on next time in the United States because we're still not done.
And Sue, I love you've got an organic product for menopause. Thank you.
Thank you. And if the last word on Premarin is just say, nay.
Well, I promise you I will not be dipping my wick in it.
Thank you. I can't even. I don't want that image around me.
I'm very careful where I dip my wick. And,
you boys.
That doesn't sound like a good one.
Is that where WikiLeaks leaks came from?
WikiLeaks. Okay.
I think that was Freudian. But anyway. Again, I hope everybody has a wonderful weekend. And for our listeners in L.A., don't worry, Carmageddon will be gone on Monday if they are done removing the freeway. I'm not sure they will be.
Oh, and Sue, can people order your product right now if they wanted it?
Can order it on GorillaHealth.com, and we're just coming out with a summer special. It may not be on the website yet, but in their order, if they just mention surviving the 21st century, we'll be sure and put them in on the special.
Well, thank you.
Thank you very much, Sue.
Sue, thank you so much for taking time to talk with us today. Are you heading back to Vietnam?
Soon, yes. Yes. I invite you to come.
And listen, I wish Sue puts on these little cooking tours that I've been just wish we could have attended a few
next
times.
Next year, I'm not going to miss it.
Yeah.
I'm already planning it. I'm healthy now.
So anyway, we're looking forward to, and we'll look forward to seeing you when you get back.
Thank you. Thanks, all.
All right. And bye everyone.
Bye, Simon.
Goodbye. All right. Till next time, this is Simon Barrett wishing everyone a happy and safe weekend and safe life. We will talk again soon. Till next time, goodbye.